Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, the number is 1-800-492-5538. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And of course, you can hear Anthony by himself. Well, not by himself. He has guests. Every five to seven p.m.
Sometimes it feels like it.
Just 7 p.m.
Mark, can I say something personal? I was thinking about it as I was watching you in the last hour. And most of your listeners and my listeners know that I've been undergoing treatment for cancer.
Yes.
And I just, you know, people hear me talk about you all the time. And I just needed to take a second just to thank you for being such an incredible friend. And you stood by me again, and you were there for me when I needed you, and you patted me on the back, and you kept encouraging me. So thank you for being so awesome. He really is as awesome as he sounds. He really is really good man.
You're my brother. What am I going to do?
That's right. You're stuck with me.
You hanging? We're going to talk about some kids in this country who were left hanging, and I sadly do not mean that as a joke. I mean in some cases literally and figuratively left hanging in America. And the question is, what's going on? What is happening with cyber harassment in the United States of America? Our laws don't seem to cover it, as we've had many times. One of our guests here today is one who's an expert on this stuff and understands how technology is changing society and how we need to respond to that and how we respond to that technology and legally and morally and ethically, socially, as a community. And also it's a question of what is happening to these kids in our world who are being harassed. And why it seems, you know, 5 out of 100s of millions may not seem a lot, but it's a lot of young people at 1 week to have killed themselves because they were harassed because of their sexuality. And their
perceived
sexuality. Mm-hmm. I mean, 13-year-old Carl Walker Hoover
11.
Died 11 years old, mm-hmm. 12, just turned 12.
Just turned 12.
He hung himself when he was 11 because he was teased for being gay. On the web and in his face. And, you know, gay at 11? Well, maybe you are gay at 11, but who's sexual at 11? We hope not too many people.
That's right.
And he hung himself and died 5 days later. 15-year-old Bobby Lucas in Indiana. 13-year-old Seth Walsh hung himself in Minnesota. 13-year-old Asher Brown shot himself in the head in Texas. 18-year-old Tyler Clemente jumped off the George Washington Bridge. He was a student at Rutgers. And it leads a lot of questions, but some of those questions it leads us to talk about this hour, besides the whole cyber harassment issue and what that means and how you address it, what this new technology has done to us. We're taking pictures of people making love to somebody and then having them flat put on the web, which is what happened to Tyler Clemente, who was making love with another man in his dorm room. And where was Rutgers University? Where are universities in terms of counseling the students who are in trouble? Maybe, and we'll talk about that as well. And so, of course, Anthony McCarthy is here. This is an issue that means a great deal to him. We are joined in studio once again by Vanessa Bowling, who hasn't been here a while, but she's back. Vanessa is the president of Rainbow Soul, the Morgan State University Gay Straight Alliance. And Vanessa, good to have you in the studio with us.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Great to see you again. Dr. Zeynep Tufekci is with us. She's been on the show many times now. She's becoming a regular guest, which is great. She's an assistant professor at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology, and author of the blog www.technosociology.org, and really is an expert on the social effects, cultural effects of our new technology. And Zeynep, welcome. Good to have you back with us as well.
Thank you for inviting me again.
It's always a pleasure to have you. I want to see you back in the studio, though, one day.
I hope to.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Zeynep, let me begin with you, and Anthony, please just leap in here. This whole question of cyber harassment and the difficulty, A, of prosecuting things when they happen on the web, but also this whole new area coming up that is just the technology is the negative end of where this technology is taking us is social media.
Well, there are a couple of things. There are a couple of interrelated things. One, this kind of harassment of kids, teens that are perceived to be gay or different or, you know, some other vulnerability. It's been going on a long time. You know, yep. anybody who's sort of been, who grew up with before the internet can attest to this.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. What has happened, there are two things that have happened. One, internet has made it visible to a much larger audience, which I think is actually a good thing because it allows us to mobilize resources to help these kids, and sometimes the internet itself can be a resource to reach those teens who are otherwise surrounded in a hostile environment, who may not have supportive parents or who may not have supportive school administration. They can reach to responsible adults through the internet. So it's a, you know, two double-edged sword there. It makes something that always existed visible, also allows us to respond to it. But the second thing that the internet does change, so besides just making something that used to happen visible, is that in the case like this, let's say there was a dorm room cruelty or a malicious prank like this, and you found out that your roommate was having an intimate encounter with somebody same sex, and you gossiped about it, or you told people, or you teased that person. And it would be in that dorm, and it would not be exposed to the world. The thing that technology changes is that it can all of a sudden make you some form of celebrity, it's in a perverted way, and exposed to the whole world. And when you're 18 or 16 or 13, that can just seem so overwhelming. I think that's the danger here, is that a prank that otherwise would still have been hurtful and difficult gets out of hand in the blink of an eye, somebody might think, I will never live this moment down. I will never get out of this, because you can't say, oh, I'll just go to another dorm. I'll get a new roommate. I'll go to another university. You're just thinking, now it's over on the web forever and everywhere. So that is the part that I think is that we haven't really developed resources to deal with. There has to be some way for kids like this to reach out immediately. I mean, because suicide is an impulse. Right, it's not. You have to get to that person in that window where they're in despairing and say, "It gets better. You'll get over this." And the internet can make it very hard. Now, in terms of what the colleges are doing, it's a tough line too, because students might also be wondering, if they go to a college, will they get a sympathetic ear? So maybe some other resource that's not necessarily linked to the college might be better. But I do want to emphasize that the internet cuts both ways. It creates this very vulnerable situation, but it also makes visible something adults have been ignoring. These are surely not the only, you know, gay kids who have committed suicide. There have been many and many and many over the decades that we just did not know about because they never got out there, and we kind of did not see how pernicious and cruel bullying can become, surely.
I want to ask you, along that same line, do you see law enforcement moving at least in the right direction when it comes to, because as you just pointed out, this cyber portion of this bullying just adds a whole new component, and kids tease, and we know that. I've been the victim of it. I probably, even as much as maybe blocked it out or thought I was much better than that, I probably teased as a child as well as being teased. But this cyber portion of this, I was talking to an assistant state's attorney in one of our counties who said it's just, I mean, he was wringing his hands. He said, because he's not sure how they would have the tools, the resources, or the information out in his small county to move forward.
I'm not sure really legal responses are going to be the correct way to go about it. I mean, because there are a couple of things. One, what these kids, the kids who did this this malicious prank, they're not innocent by any means. But imagine how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids have done stuff similar to that, right? And I am for these, you know, kids who are also just 18 to be punished severely. But I mean, they already are. This is going to define the rest of their lives too. I mean, there's it obviously doesn't compare to the tragedy of the, you know, loss of a person. But if we prosecuted everybody who behaved in an inappropriate or malicious way, you know what? Probably we would have no president left qualifying to run.
No,
So you can't really just address this legally.
You're right.
I do want to say one thing, though. It's not true. People keep saying that it's that kids don't care about privacy anymore. I don't think that's true. I think what's happened is that kids don't think about it any more than people 20 years ago didn't think about it. You know, it's not like they think about it any more or less. They think about it equally little, except they're now living in this very dangerous new terrain. So I don't think it's the kids that have gotten all of a sudden uncaring. They're just being kids.
No,
and they were just 30 years ago. It's just they're now on the thin ice, and they're not necessarily thinking about that. Cultural norms and education and reach out, I think, is going to be a lot more productive, along with maybe prosecution of severe cases. But an all-out prosecution,
right,
you'll get overreach. It's just so hard.
Zeynep Tufekci, a professor at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, I think I've been wrestling with this ever since these early cases where there's young girls who harassed another young girl and she committed suicide.
Yes.
In Springfield, I think it was, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
If I have that. So,
yes,
she,
that's
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I... You know, I think that, I'll just throw this out here. I was one of those kids who was taunted a lot as a young kid because I was a little bit different than the rest. And, you know, it's taunting in playground. It's people writing little notes about you in classroom. It's whatever that is, getting into fights, people trying to beat you up, having to learn how to fight, which wasn't a bad thing. But but I think that what you're saying here, Zeynep, is really important. What the social media has done is raise the consequences of those acts exponentially.
Absolutely.
And that's the issue. And I think so.
Absolutely.
Should a 16, 17-year-old child go to jail for that kind of a harassment? Is that what we do to our, you know, even if, no matter, I mean, this is something I think we should really wrestle with in a really deeper, honest way. I mean, you know, rather than the lyncher mentality, which we can get into.
Oh, definitely.
And I think let me turn over, and then we're going to go to the phone to you. Fran and Aaron, we're going to come to your calls, but I do want to bring Vanessa Boulding, president of the Rainbow Alliance, Morgan State University's Gay Straight Alliance here, back on the program. And what are your thoughts on this, Vanessa?
I can't even really verbalize how I feel about it. I think it's ridiculous.
What is ridiculous?
What these two people did to Tyler Clemente and all of the other people who have lost their lives in the past couple of weeks. When somebody feels as if the only way out is to end their life just because they have a different sexual orientation than someone else, it really makes me sad. I'm in residence life myself. I'm a resident assistant in one of the dorms here on campus. And there's absolutely, I don't know what I would do if somebody came to me and told me that their roommate was bullying them, put them live on the internet, and then comes and says, oh, I'm not a homophobe. I'm not a homophobe at all. It's okay. You know, it's okay. Whatever he wants to do is fine. I don't know what I would do. I know that here on campus, the climate is okay. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. I know that I've been very vocal personally trying to get people to know that they can come to me. There's a counseling center. A lot of people go to the counseling center, but other than the counseling center, there's really no other place to go. I know Towson University, they have a LGBT student development office. I think that's the only university in this area that I know of that has resources like that for LGBT students. There are some campuses, I know you can, if you are an incoming college student, you can go and find out what the campus climate is. I know here, the campus climate, out of 5 stars, we have 2.
That means for the harassment of gay and lesbian students?
It means the resources. And,
available for gay and lesbian students.
Right, resources, bullying, all of that put together, we have 2 out of 5 stars. There are some universities around here who have 5. I know American University, just in D.C., has 5 out of 5 stars. So it really, having those resources available for students so that they know that there is someone who's there for them. Whether it's a Gay Straight Alliance, whether it's a supportive faculty member, whatever it may be, I know that in Virginia, and I, excuse me if I pronounce his name wrong, but the Virginia Attorney General, Ken Cusinelli, I believe his name is.
Cusinelli.
Mm-hmm. When he came into office, he wrote a letter to all the public schools, the colleges and universities in the state, telling them that they needed to rescind their policies that banned discrimination based on sexual orientation. So I'm not exactly sure if they actually did it, but if I was in a Virginia school, and that's what I'm hearing, and I'm an openly gay, openly lesbian, or even a transgender, we haven't even gotten into transgender students. They have it worse than most gay and lesbian bisexual students on campus. But I would be appalled if I went to a Virginia school and that happened.
And we've been asked by the Maryland Black Family Alliance to have a program with them and transgender young people from the African-American community on to talk. So we're going to be doing that shortly as well.
I think we can sort of concentrate on the fact that we can turn the Internet around and use it to reach, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender youth, not just in colleges, but, you know, in high schools where this is worse, actually. You know, by the time you get to college, you usually have, you know, a better, more self-awareness. You've been through high school. And to sort of it cuts both ways. You know, we now also have tools to reach a large number of people and bypass, you know, various authority figures in their lives that might not be doing what they should be doing as compassionate adults. They might be ignoring this, because I hear a lot of, you know, really horrible stories, especially out of high schools, where, you know, even if you don't have a vulnerability like different, you know, minority sexual orientation, it can be harrowing. Mm-hmm. You know, when I teach freshmen classes, first day of class, I ask them how many people are, you know, happy to be out of high school. It's 80%. I'm just wondering, you know, high school is tough for everyone, and sexual orientation can make it really, really tough.
Especially now that we have a world where there are more and more people who are more open with their sexuality.
That's because there is more support. There is a lot of high schools where there's gay, lesbian, straight alliance.
Right.
So, I mean, we're making progress, except progress always comes with this, you know, when you raise your head up, then more people might try to beat you down. You know, progress comes with this. So it's not hopeless. It's because we're making progress. We're seeing more of this.
That's a very interesting analysis.
And we are making progress. But, Mark, I can remember back to my freshman year in high school in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, where and this is about sociology, where if they called me the N-word, people rallied to my side. People stood by me. People were willing to fight with me along that issue of race. But these thugs that went to high school with me, the moment they start calling you gay or that using the F word, we have been socialized in our society that is the worst, that the gays and lesbians are on the dregs. And the professor probably won't agree to this, but I'm telling you, even here at this campus at Morgan, when I have come to speak to support gay and lesbian students, the self-righteousness of so many black students on this campus who are doing everything from drinking to drugs, mm-hmm. but willing to beat down verbally and physically gay and lesbian students. We have a real problem. All five of these children, not some of the little kids, did come out as gay. They told their parents they were gay. But, Mark, I'm telling you, those students were targeted because in our school system and in our society, we have given people permission. Still, we've made progress, but we have given people permission to discriminate and hate and assault gay and lesbian people. And just because they're coming out younger, and they are.
Let me do this before – let me get open the phones here. Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is important. I want to hear our listeners is thinking we have a number of people calling in. And see where they take us in this conversation. You just heard my dear friend and co-host on Mondays, Anthony McCarthy. We're joined by Dr. Zeynep Tufekci, assistant professor at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology. Her blog is www.technosociology.org. Vanessa Bowling is president of Rainbow Alliance, the Morgan State University Gay Straight Alliance. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page. And if you're a friend or like us, please jot your – we have two different pages. One's
That's
a friend
right.
page. We're going to shift everyone over to our like page, because which is where we want you all to go. But anyway, you can join the conversation there. 410-319-8888. Fran, you're on the air.
Fran?
Fran, you there? Can we pot her up? Fran?
Hello?
There you are.
You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Everything you've said is true, all of it. And I'm going to start with Anthony's comment of where we are today, and that is it's not okay to discriminate or bully in the schools anymore because this is where our kids, our children, are. They're most severely vulnerable. They're at that stage of, who am I? Do I really want to do this? And they have all the peer pressures of the world bombarded with that of their families and then them blooming out on their own to see who they want to be. Here's my position on this. There are, for lack of a better word, evil entities out here beyond.
Go ahead, Fran.
Okay, I don't know what that was. There are evil entities out here beyond our control that are behind these things. And what they are trying to do. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead, finish your saying.
Okay, that they're trying to go after these kids when they're at their most vulnerable. And we have to enact laws along Anthony's guidelines, which is it's not okay for you to do this stuff because it can push people over the edge. You have to make them accountable for this. The thing of, I didn't know they were like that, it doesn't work anymore.
Okay, Fran, thank you. Let's get another caller here that we'll get comments back from our guest. 410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, good afternoon.
Hi, Aaron.
Well, I'm embarrassed as an adult to admit that I'm still trying to navigate Twitter and Facebook. But as an adult, what do I look for that lets me know that a child around me may be cyber-bullied on a computer? What do I look for? What signs do I look for?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
Zainab?
For the many cyber-illiterate parents that we have. Zainab? I think we need to call her back.
Maybe
I think
that's what happened.
That was that noise. We lost Zainab. So let's get her back on the phone, if we could. 410-319-8888 is number here, and we'll get her back as soon as we can. What would you say to parents?
Well, I would say that some of the warning signs of suicide, I can tell you some of those. I'm not exactly sure how you can tell that your child is being cyberbullied. I know that if they spend a lot of time on the internet, I know I was growing up when AOL was really popular and everyone was in the chat rooms and someone said something inappropriate to me and my godmother just happened to come in and told me I couldn't get on it anymore. But some of the warning signs are withdrawal. If your children are withdrawing from things that they like to do, that they used to have interest in, sleeping problems, if your children can't go to sleep, if it takes them a long time, if they have insomnia, if they wake up numerous times during the night, if they start giving away some of their prized possessions, things that they really, really love, and they just start giving it away, selling it, usually not selling it if they are thinking about committing suicide, but if they suddenly start talking about going away, they could say something about wanting to commit suicide. A lot of people who are going to commit suicide usually don't say anything because if they really have it in their mind, they won't. But they always do that cry for help. So it could be that they say something to you.
Zainab, you're back. Is that right? You're back with us?
Hello?
Hi. So somebody called down if you heard the question. The question was they're asking, what does a parent look for when it comes to cyberbullying? How do you even know what's going on?
Well, it depends on the age of the kid how you look, but I do want to emphasize that cyberbullying is often mixed with, you know, regular bullying. The kids, the way they live, they don't have this offline and online world completely separated with, you know, one side, you know, everything is, you know, roses and puppies and the other side is horrible. It's not like that. So if they're being bullied online, they're probably being bullied offline too. And so it's the whole package they have to look for. The first thing I think that's important is to have an open channel of conversation with the child, and depending on the age, some level of monitoring over their communication. But it really can, that's a tricky one, because you can't really put older kids on a system of surveillance and then expect that
to work. They're going to get around it. They also want to have a private life. So it's just like any other kind of balance you have to strike with teenagers, is that have ways that they can come to you rather than you constantly try to, you know, look over their shoulder and, you know, read their diaries or read their online journals. The other thing I think that's important is to establish other adults besides parents or besides teachers that are available to these kids, because they might not necessarily want to go to a teacher. There must be people around that can act like trusted adults. It can be school counselors, it could be, you know, relatives, could be aunts, because you don't always want to fess up to your mom, to be frank, on everything. You want to sort of, you know, you're growing
up. No. I'm laughing with you, not at you. You're correct, absolutely correct.
It's a negotiation. You want to also prove your independence.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want to deal with some of the bullying yourself to the degree. The point is there's a line there where you're drowning. And that's when we need to get to those kids. And I think if there are resources that have no stakes attached to them, you know, that, because you might think if I tell my parent I'm suicidal once, then she'll never let me out of the house again. You know, you might be thinking like that. So you have to have resources that don't necessarily have all those stakes attached to them also available, so that kids can feel comfortable. Now, the other thing that's earlier that we were talking about is that, you know, there's a cultural norm aspect to it. We as a society, if we can make it really clear that we don't give permission for this kind of bullying, it will go down the way certain, I mean, you still have racial animosity, but there are lines that most people know they should not cross. So even if you can't change everyone's minds, I'll go with changing their behavior so we can get kids through.
No, I think what you're saying is really important. We have to take a short break, unless anything you want to take us with a thought there. I think I think what you said earlier is a really interesting concept to wrestle with. That this, we're, because of the advances we've made, this is a pushback.
Mm-hmm.
This is an emotional pushback, and that we're at a point in society now where we have to make the push you're talking about, which is just as is unacceptable to harass, let's say, black children in a minority situation in a mostly white school with the N-word or any other racial epithet. It's not socially acceptable. You do not do it. We haven't gotten that
regardless point of what you do at home.
Right, exactly.
But here in this school, in this environment, we will not tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't gotten to that place with gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual kids or in our society.
Making all this cyberbullying visible maybe will help us realize.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe it will. This is an interesting way of looking at this. We have to take a really short break and come right back to finish this conversation. So Aaron, Ernest, Sandy, Jamal, we're coming to your calls when we return. With our guests, with, I think, a very original and different look at this than I've heard elsewhere with our two guests. And I always conclude, Anthony's a host, not a guest, he's a co-host, but always bringing an interesting news twist to this. Let me remind you all as we go to break that WEAA is looking for area restaurants and caterers to provide an in-kind donation to feeder volunteers for our upcoming fall drive, membership drive. By providing an in-kind donation, you have the opportunity to make a unique contribution to WEAA. It will acknowledge your business on the air during the fall drive, and you'll go a long way to helping your public radio station here at WEAA. Call 443-885-2075, 443-885-2075. And that drive, by the way, folks, if you can contribute, is October 9th through October 17th. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are talking about what has come out of the tragic deaths of five young people in our country who suffered cyber harassment because of their perceived sexuality, and some their actual sexuality, but their perceived sexuality. A 12-year-old, Carl Walker Hoover, 12 years old, hung himself in Springfield, Massachusetts, died 5 days after being in intensive care. 15-year-old Billy Lucas in Indiana. 13-year-old Seth Walsh hung himself in Minnesota. 13-year-old Asher Brown shot himself in the head in Texas. And 18-year-old Tyler Clemente jumped off the George Washington Bridge, a student at Rutgers, as two other students videotaped his, I don't know if they videotaped or they got his video, they videotaped
they
him.
They hit a camera in.
Mm-hmm. And videotaped and put him having sexual relations with another man on the web. And we are joined in studio by Vanessa Bowling, president of the Rainbow Soul, the Morgan State University Gay Straight Alliance. I say we because, of course, my co-host Anthony McCarthy and I are here together on Mondays. And Dr. Zeynep Tufekci is with us. She is assistant professor at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, in sociology and anthropology, and author of the blog www.technosociology.org. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're going to go right to the phones. Roger Kamenetz wrote in on Facebook from Louisiana. He's the author of the book The Lotus and the Jew, another other wonderful books he's written. He wrote in, well, I think it's very important, very, to condemn the bullying behavior. Maybe of more life-saving importance is to let at-risk people know there's someone to talk with who will help. I wonder what services are available for this at Rutgers. This young man did not have to die, even though he was bullied. If he'd find the right support and counseling, he might still be alive. With all of our focus on the bullies, we need to focus much more on how to communicate to all at-risk students that taking your life is not the option, writes in Roger Kamenetz, which is what you were saying earlier, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vanessa.
Yes, and there are some places where LGBT youth, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender youth can go. One of the places, it's not on Rutgers campus, but it's a national hotline. It's the Trevor Project, which is a nonprofit to aid in suicide prevention for LGBTQ, the Q is questioning, youth. And their phone number for anyone, and I'll repeat it again later, is 1-866-4U-TREVOR, T-R-E-V-O-R. That's 1-866-488-7386. That's just one of the resources for anyone who's contemplating suicide, who's in the LGBT community.
No, finish. I'm sorry.
Oh, and there are also a lot of websites where people can go to get resources. Anybody who needs somebody to talk to, they can look at local gay straight alliances at the schools in their town, their city. If they don't want to go to their school, they can reach out. I know that I would never turn away a high school student who wanted to come to one of our meetings because they may not have another place to turn. They may not feel comfortable. So I definitely say if people need to talk, they can also find allies.
That's good. And we'll put all that stuff on our web and announce it again at the end of the hour. We'll keep that up. Let's go to the phones, I promise. 410-319-8888. Ernest on the West Side, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, Ernest.
I think you have to look at this a little. I'm talking about the young man, Clemente. If you go to a college campus, if you're at the Naval Academy or Army Academy or one of the military academies and you're involved in any kind of sexual behavior in your dorm room, if you're caught, whether it's put on the internet or not, you're not going to graduate. They're going to put you out. So when you're in a college and as a student, and I think parents have to make this clear. When your child go to college, you should be there to see who they're rooming with, what the room looks like, find out if your son is comfortable. And then if a person is going to be involved in different activities, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, if you're a parent and you're okay with it, then they don't need to be in a room with another person where that might be offensive to them. They need their own room. Now, as a freshman, in most colleges, you're required to stay on college campus. But even heterosexuals in college that room together sometimes at the end of the school year, they are not even speaking. They don't even associate. So it's very important that you talk to your children and make sure that they're in the right environment, although they're away from home. Now, as far as in a college life, you're going to have a lot of people that are gay, and people get along with gay people, and they should. You have a lot of people that are heterosexual. But when it comes to a dorm room where studies are, you can't ask a person, say, well, look, I want to be involved in this activity or that activity.
But I don't quite understand where you're going. I mean, most people in their dorm rooms, that those things go on all the time, whether you're gay or straight. I mean, it's not something new. I mean, this is
if your roommate does not agree with it, then don't you think you need to be in a?
Well, what's the question of agreeing with it? But it's nothing to do with agreement. This people brought a camera into this kid's with this young man was and illegally videotaped him and then put it up on the web.
But that was wrong. But I don't think since they were sharing the same room. The questions I heard attorneys talk about it is that it's not that they both share the same room. Mm-hmm. So you are able to videotape anything in the room that you're in.
No. That's not true.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. You cannot. That's why they're being charged with invasion of privacy because they invaded this young man's.
Because he's being charged, that don't mean that he's going to be found guilty.
Okay. All right, Ernest.
Doesn't mean that he's going to be found guilty.
All right, well, we don't know that until the thing, but I'm not. I hear what you're saying, but I think that this is again. This is like.
It's not like a person. He came into somebody else's room. That room was being shared by the other party. That
okay. It seems like we're playing blame the victim game here.
I'm not blaming a victim. I'm not blaming a victim. But the fact that you can't blame that guy for him jumping off of the bridge. You don't know what his mental condition was, and you don't know if they talked about it. You don't know that. That's just an assumption on your part.
What? No, I didn't. I never said that.
But they're charging with invasion of privacy.
We'll see where that court case goes. But the question goes it was an invasion of privacy to videotape someone's private acts, even in a shared room, and put it on the web for millions of people to see. That's the issue, and whether that led to his suicide or not is an issue that I think that we have to wrestle with and what all that means. I mean, it's different than kind of writing on the bathroom wall that, you know, so-and-so does it with so-and-so, I just saw him do it, or whatever, and having mm-hmm. something posted on the web and then having for the world to see. But, Ernest, I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. Let's go to Aaron in East Baltimore. Aaron, you're on the air. Aaron, you there? Aaron? All right, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to TC in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm a gay man. I graduated from Rutgers. I originally from New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
Tyler Clemente shouldn't have done what he did because, realistically speaking, do you know how many resources there are at Rutgers? The young lady that's there, that's the RA, residence life down here at Morgan State,
mm-hmm.
Rutgers probably has, if it's a five-star scale, Rutgers rates a 6.
Okay, so what's your point, TC?
My point is that he should have. There was resources. There were more resources than I can even name, ranging from the fact that the gay student organization on campus is one of the oldest ones in the country, to one of the most tolerant, diverse campuses. He should have been felt comfortable talking to someone. It's almost inexcusable.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that certainly kudos to Rutgers for those resources that are available. Mm-hmm. All of our journeys, including TC's, is personal. Our level of comfort with people knowing about our sexuality, it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine, you know, what it was like when I came out for my family, what it was certainly my classmates, my friends. But I can only imagine to what level each of us individually would react to having a sexual encounter videotaped by someone that we trusted.
Heterosexual or gay.
And have that broadcast across the internet. And not only broadcast, but your roommate posting, telling people when it's going to happen. Because you said, hey, can I have the room from 10 to 12? And so
it wasn't videotaped. It was live broadcast. And also, this is exactly where the internet.
By videotaped, Professor, I meant actually a live broadcast. I didn't mean videotaped like
which
recorded.
Is even crazier, right? Because it's not like they videotaped it.
That's right.
Intervene. It's just happening right there. By the time you know about it, it's done. It's there for the. It's not like you can ever take that, you know, back, and you never know
that's
how many
true.
People saw it. And I think this is the thing. I don't think kids are different necessarily, you know, from kids, say, 20 years ago in terms of the privacy issues.
Yeah.
They just aren't thinking about it. But this tool now gives a kid the ability to broadcast potentially to the whole world something with the click of a hand, you know, just go click. And we have other cases. We have cases like there was a kid who's, you know, just he was playing around pretending to be Luke Skywalker on Star Wars or something like that. And it was put, he just videotaped himself and put a tape.
Right, yeah.
And then he got unfortunate. I mean, this kid was, I think, 13 when this happened, and he was clumsy. You know, 13-year-olds are clumsy. And it went viral, so to speak. And he had a harrowing childhood because of this. And he went through, and I know, years of therapy and is barely recovering. Because all of a sudden, you know, you're 13 and the whole world is making fun of you.
And Mark, I think, and Vanessa probably can contest to this as well, and I think there's hope. When you and I were watching the video for our research, and the mother of Carl Walker Hoover received letters from even some of the bullies saying, I am so sorry that I participated in this, or I did this, and I never meant.
The 11-year-old boy who hung himself.
And that they never, and I mean, children, for me, I keep saying children can be mean, but children in many ways are innocent, and even their taunting and behavior, bullying behavior. These kids wrote letters to his mother saying, I'm sorry.
And sometimes making the hate visible, as I said, allows us an opportunity to push back. There's a really interesting case a couple of weeks ago. A 49-year-old bicyclist in Florida, I believe St. Petersburg, was killed by a hit-and-run driver. And the man was apparently a dishwasher at a local restaurant. And the newspaper has comments, right? And some of the commenters said stuff like, well, he was 48 and a dishwasher. That's his emotion. Really evil, hateful stuff. But you know what? The people who are thinking this, that you don't necessarily see, they say to their friends, they say, you know, whether it's anti-gay stuff or racist stuff, they say it among each other in the hiding. Whereas now with the newspaper, you sort of see this. You can no longer ignore if you're not from one of those classes of people that are, you know, picked on or prosecuted. You can't really ignore it. You see this. And in response, the newspaper ran this longer story about the person, saying, okay, this is a person. Rather, before, it was kind of a little one-liner. The whole death is tragedy, but I think if it makes us realize there's this kind of really hateful attitudes out there, and then we sort of the decent people, or we like to think of ourselves that way, right, can mobilize resources. And we all can be in different points depending on where we are in our life. We're all vulnerable in different ways. I mean, show me a person who's not insecure or invulnerable in some way. Even if you're not in one of those categories that is specifically picked on, like a racial or sexual minority. So maybe this is an opportunity to look at things we'd rather not see and realize they're still there.
I think that that's – and I think that the more honest we are about those things – the greater clarity maybe some of us can help bring to this. I think what you're saying is really I mean, I think
the bullying, it's still there. Now the internet makes it visible, so let's go at it.
I think that's I think this is a refreshing way of looking at it in terms of maybe a strategy and thoughts about how we as a culture and society can deal with it. Before we come back over to Vanessa, let's go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Sandy's been holding on for a long time. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how you doing? How you doing, Anthony? It's Sandy Rawls.
Hey, Sandy.
Welcome.
How are you? I just want to put this out there real quick that we launched the No More Hate Crimes, No More LGBTQIA Hate Crimes campaign back in April 2010. And Anthony, you spoke at that.
I remember. It was powerful.
Yeah, it was real powerful, and we thank you for your blessed words and your blessed wisdom. And I just want to let people know that from that campaign, we were able to establish a LGBT hate crimes database now. So if people are being harassed and everything, that they can go downtown and or call downtown or call Trans United and give us their information or whatever, and we can put them in touch with the state's attorney's office, and they can get on that database. The state's attorney's office also can provide them with different resources that can help them out of the situation and kind of, you know, coach them through the situation and stuff. But we also provide resources that will help individuals get through the problem on campus. I'll give you an example. For instance, one of my clients, one of my members of TransUnited, is a student at Coppin, and she was harassed by some football players. So we plan to get in contact with the dean and let them know that it is not tolerated anymore on college campus. When people are trying to get an education to better themselves or stabilize themselves in society, they should have a right to do so without being faced with so much enormous discrimination. They should have a right to do so. So, you know, we're going to handle those things that way. But I just want to go back to that Facebook comment, or that comment that the young man made a little earlier about, you know, him having a right to meet someone like that. That's not right.
I appreciate the call. One of the things I thought about, Sandy, as you were speaking, is as we recovered with the One Nation Together rally on Saturday, one of the unique things about this demonstration on Saturday was the fact that this was the NAACP and the labor unions, along with the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual community, who were the main forces behind this march. I don't think there's ever been a time when I've seen the NAACP come together with unions I've never seen a time when unions and NAACP came together with gay, lesbian, transgender groups to form a march for the future of America's One Nation Together. That was a huge step forward. And in some ways, Zainab, what you were saying earlier feeds into this. I didn't think the connection, but because it's a connection here directly between that march and that breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you were saying this may be an opportunity for us to push this entire agenda of understanding and ending the violence against gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people in our world. This may be an opportune moment to really push that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'm glad you helped make that connection tonight. I think, Zainab, and I deeply appreciate that.
Oh, great discussion, as usual.
Let me go to another couple of callers in here if we can. Jamal, you're on the air.
Hello, Jamal.
Jamal, you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Actually, I've been listening to the conversation quite a bit. It is very interesting. Actually, I am a grad student at Morgan, and I was also an undergraduate student at Morgan. And I can say that as a gay male, especially growing up, the bullying that I encountered, not even understanding what homosexuality was and being basically confronted with it from grade school even through college, is a traumatic, however strengthening, ordeal to go through. And when I heard about this particular ordeal, I could just imagine the things that individual went through. Even talking about resources, it's not applicable to basically state that individual had no right or was wrong in committing suicide because they did not know the resources. This particular lifestyle, if you aren't aware of those particular entities, knowing that you can still be a great person and be a homosexual or self-identify with homosexuality or whatever the case may be, sometimes everyone is not aware of that. I know as a child growing up, I was always told that I was somebody, that I was somebody special. Even those days of taunting and things of that nature, that's what kept me going. That's what kept me motivated to always be the best that I could possibly be,
mm-hmm.
despite my sexuality. And I think that a lot of individuals, if for every one of me, there are five others who don't have that support system. So assume that a person who goes to college or university is going to be supported, that they have somewhere to go to express those feelings, is not always the case. And being a student at Morgan, I can say that we're well behind the times as far as having places for individuals to go. I believe Rainbow Soul is a wonderful organization that started when I was actually an undergrad. However, me being the person I am today, I think I would have been, you know, just geared to be a part of that organization.
All right. Jamal, we're almost out of time. I really do appreciate you holding on and being part of this discussion.
Thank you very much,
Jamal.
Thank you.
I think we have reached a point here in some ways where there's a notion that something maybe can begin to change. You know, I was in Chestertown as part of our On Del Marva project, and interviewing people from the mayor of Chestertown and people black and white from Chestertown, a segregated community that in some ways is made is still way back in terms of its connection. But even they had. So this is what they just did there. They just had what was akin to a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Mm. It was a reconciliation evening in a theater that's now the theater center that was a center that made black folks sit on the balcony, white folks downstairs, and people came back from all generations to apologize to the black community for their behavior towards it. This was in Chestertown, which is a pretty amazing step. Mm-hmm. Now, and if this would, and especially what Dr. Zainab Tofekci was saying, maybe this is a way we can make a major step here to create a dialogue and conversation about gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual rights on our campuses and our communities, to changing what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
And I think that we have the will to move that conversation forward, Mark, and talk about truth and reconciliation. I am a firm believer, and I have dear friends who believe that homosexuality is wrong. Mm-hmm. But they're still dear friends because they treat me with respect and dignity, the same thing I give them. And I think there's an opportunity, whatever's going on in our homes, to teach our children that you do teach people, treat people with dignity and respect.
I want to thank all of our guests. I want to thank you, Anthony McCarthy, for being
always
here co-hosting.
Here.
I want to thank Vanessa Bowling for coming in, Dr. Zainab Tofekci for joining. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you
all so much for being part of it. Thank you all for calling and writing in and making the show what it is. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts, culture, food, drink, home design, style, and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Up-to-date information can be delivered to your inbox at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. We are produced by Christina Arison and Justin Levy. We're engineered tonight by Brian Boone. Our interns were Shari Barnes, Ashley Boddy, and Richard Good. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and get information from our guests and about our guests, visit us on the web at SteinerShow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.